It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. We'll talk about Google as a hardware company, the latest in NSA spying, and what happens when a dog hasn't seen its master in 6 months. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 209, recorded July 31st, 2013. Daddy's home. This Week in Google is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG7. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/twig to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. This Week in Google, Leo Laporte here with Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York. Are you in your office? Oh, I know why the angle's different. You're on a Mac.
I'm on a Mac.
I'm so sorry.
Here. I can get us back to the norm, but I switched. I actually time traveled. I went back 4 months.
Free Pixel.
Yes.
I had a scare when I boot. Oh, and Gina Trapani is here also from smarterware.org. Hi, Gina, and all about Android.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. You know, we had Dan Benjamin on the show on Sunday.
That was a great show. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but that made me so happy. I love Dan, and it made me feel like, the two podcasting godfathers together at the same table. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
Incredibly, it was a very generous act to put him there. And the greatest moment was when they did the commercial where they both have a code. Leo at first offered that you could use either code.
Yeah.
Oh, then, wow. I changed my mind
because he did something that made me mad. I forgot what it was.
He wanted the mug or something. He was going to steal your mug.
He said, can I have the mug? Yeah, I said, you can have the mug, but you can't. Then I want my code back. Hey, did he take the mug? I don't remember. He didn't. Oh, well, then you can use his code. I know. I'm way too generous. I don't know why I'm so generous.
It was really cool for someone who's a fan. And obviously, I'm a host on both networks. But to be a fan of both networks, to see you two together was very, very cool. And I don't really get to see Dan because, he doesn't do video. So that was really cool. I was like,
it's a good-looking fella. Like, but, he's smaller than I thought. Because when you see him in person, he's kind of a...
I always get the opposite. I always get, you're tall.
Yeah, you're tall. Yeah.
Nobody knows it from my little tiny face here.
I guess people just assume that you're kind of a certain average, and then when they meet you in person, then if you deviate. What's really bad is, and I've had this for years since I've been in radio since 1976, when people don't ever see you but they hear your voice and they meet you, they can't help it. Their face always falls.
Aw, well, you have a pretty great radio voice.
I didn't know you were so handsome and lovely.
I thought you were tall and blonde. Oh. No, I'm squat and dark.
Gina is 6'2".
Yeah. She is so tall. It's so amazing to meet her in person. Actually,
basketball career is something she never talks about.
WNBA, football, superstar.
Yes.
Gold medal from the Olympics in 2002. Really
those
amazing.
WNBA ladies could squash me with one sneaker. One sneaker they could smash me.
You know who's tall? And I hate doing this. I think I suppressed my reaction when I met you for the first time, Jeff. But you know who's really tall? And I couldn't suppress my reaction. Do you know who Zadie Diaz is? She's a podcaster. And she is very tall. So much so that I could not suppress my reaction. It was like...
Well, I knew she was tall on because of the podcast that I watched. She would get off and move around in her chair and all that. You get some sense of her.
Yeah. Well, just shocked. And I'd been watching her for years. Yeah. And I was just like, whoa. And it was Epic Food, probably, is the one you were watching. This great podcast.
Yeah.
But, she's extremely tall. And I feel bad because, when I go, oh, you're tall. The poor woman's getting that her whole life, right? So I feel bad, but what can you do?
Sure.
people, you know, they meet me, they go, oh my God, you're gorgeous. And, you know, it's kind of embarrassing, but I have to live up with that, live through that.
Statistically, tall people are more successful, so you don't keep
right.
the tall ones.
You're right. It's almost like saying, you're better than me. Wow.
Wow.
My sister, for a long time, dated her college boyfriend was a short guy who was very sensitive about it. And for a while, thank God that didn't happen, but for a while they were engaged. And my reaction was, oh, good. I've always wanted a little brother.
Oh, dear.
Those are
embarrassing things you can never take back.
No.
Nothing you can do. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I don't want to miss the changelog. Last week, the entire episode was a changelog because, of course, we followed on the heels of Google's amazing morning announcement with the new Kindle 4.3 and, of course, the Chromecast. So let's just launch right into it. Brian Burnett, do you have the trumpets? Would you play the changelog trumpets right now?
The Google changelog.
Ladies and gentlemen, what's new at Google? Gina Trapani has everything.
Google has relaunched Zagat's website and mobile apps. There's no payment or registration required. Yeah, so this is the first time. All of Zagat's ratings and reviews are available for free. You don't even have to register. Right now, the website only covers 9 cities: San Francisco, Austin, Boston, Chicago, London, Los Angeles, New York City, Philadelphia, and DC. But that's going to expand, Google says. And
it's a little deceptive because, for instance, you can search for restaurants with Zagat ratings in Petaluma and it will show them. You choose a location and the website lets you choose, but you can still, apparently still has access to the full database. I'm not sure. It's unclear. But Petaluma's restaurants are still in there.
Interesting. Yeah. I just installed the Android app and it made me choose
a city from that small selection. Yeah.
Yeah. From that small selection. But now it's interesting.
That's your default, but you can still search by location as you could before. You could say, what's near me right now? Zagat is fabulous. I love Zagat.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is really nice. It's cool to see them putting resources into this relaunch. And it's going to expand to beyond just restaurants as well, which is where Zagat was headed.
It's also pretty. I mean, it's more editorial looking, right?
Lots of big images and media. Yeah. Really nice. I actually haven't looked at it on a tablet yet, but it looks like it would be tablet optimized.
And there goes a paywall.
Yay. Yeah, because what was this? I paid like $40 a year or something for this. Yeah, it wasn't cheap. Yeah. And then they had the books that you'd have to buy the books too.
Mm-hmm. How integrated is it with Google?
Well, it's always been in the maps, right? If you are on a map and you tap a restaurant, it's hard to find. But you could get the Zagat ratings. If you worked around, because Lisa and I have a game where we go to a restaurant and she will say what the rating should be.
Aww.
And she's very good. I will always overrate a restaurant. She's very conservative and she's very good at it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, that is fun. That
and
is
they're
fun.
Generally trustworthy, I find. You know, if you go to the best restaurant in an area on Zagat, you generally are going to the best restaurant in an area.
Calvin Trillin used to have the great New Yorker writer, used to have a great routine about how when you went out of New York, people thought they were taking you to the best restaurant, and all it served was stuffed heavy with heavy.
Yeah. He's right, too.
Yeah.
I was talking about, we had a visitor from Greenville, South Carolina, and I remember, this was a while ago, he says, we've gotten better now. But I remember going to the best restaurant in Greenville, and everything was fried and had hush puppies for every course.
that's what it is.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
User ratings.
All right, so that's one. Well, Zagat.
On the heels of this this relaunch of the Zagat, Google Plus, the local iOS app, will be retired on August 7th. You can kind of make sense why there's a lot of overlap between the two properties. Another retirement going on, Google Shopper will be retired on August 30th.
What will Microsoft do its Scroogle ads about?
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, man.
There you go. What else do we have? Oh, we got, I know, Leo, you always sort of make fun of this feature, but handwriting got added to the Google Translate homepage. So if you go to translate.google.com, of course, you could choose the, you know, which languages you want to translate from and to. So if you choose a language, then you'll see there's a little drop down. There's a keyboard drop down on the bottom left there. It's a select input tool. You can choose handwrite.
Oh, see, I'm not on Chrome. I got to do this on Chrome, I think.
Yeah, I think you have to do it on Chrome. Yeah,
it says, try a browser with automatic translation. Download Google Chrome. Okay.
Oh, did you select a language there?
I got, I see. That's detect. Now I could do it, right?
Yeah, and then there's a button.
Here it is. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's handwrite. Wow.
Handwrite. Yeah, exactly. So you can... If you see a sign or if you want to know what it's like, you can actually handwrite with your mouse there and have it translated.
Let's see if I can handwrite something.
Something like Chinese characters.
It would be very helpful for non-Roman characters, yeah. I'm going to Greece. This will be great. This is painful with a mouse.
Yeah. It looks painful.
And then, it picked it up. Look at that.
Nice.
Look at that. Works.
It works.
Back to Zagat for a second, if I may.
Yes.
So I was looking at my New York app and going back to a topic from 2 weeks ago. If you look at my Google Plus feed, you'll see the first thing in there is that the Cronut King has a new invention.
He had to because he's been cloned in the Philippines.
Oh, no.
There's Manila Cronuts now. And Cronuts all over the world, apparently. Whether they're as good, no one knows because no one can get a Cronut.
An innovative frozen s'more that manages to contain chili ice cream and a smoky char.
Oh,
there's a video of making this thing. It's all, no, go on.
Here's Jeff Jarvis. Let me see.
It's
the
not
best.
There. Where, what's not there? It should be on the run.
Wait a minute. No, it's doing something weird.
Should have a big Z.
There we go. Here we go. The frozen the lines are going to get even longer.
I knew you'd like this.
Oh.
That's a Zagat, by the way. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's on Zagat. A Zagat spotlight. We're saying that. Oh, it's in Spring Street.
We're going so far off topic.
Oh, look at that. Are we getting audio on that, Brian? I don't hear it.
There's a Cronut. You get to see a Cronut now.
Oh.
From the maker of a Cronut.
Want Cronut.
Sorry, Twig fans.
Cronut. Must have.
They're like frozen cubes of amazingness.
They can be eaten frozen.
Oh, of Kelsey's French.
Vanilla ice cream. And it's coated with chocolate wafer.
Oh, look. He pushes the ice cream into the marshmallow.
Or frozen s'more.
It's hard to tell, you know. They're both my babies.
Well, I think I'm going to choose a favorite.
Can I marry him? Is he available? Would you come to my house, Dominique?
Right here,
my
water.
That's the kind of babies he's having.
Sugar. We're going to add some gelatin. Yeah. So we're going to bring this to a boil, cook it to 120 degrees, and then whip it and mash it with that gelatin.
Wow. So he's, you know, what's interesting is he's pretty open about how he does it.
Yeah, that's nice. A few weeks. That's good.
Because it's evidently so hard, nobody can just do it.
You can't duplicate this. They even the Cronuts.
That looks about ready to make.
Although it's funny to hear the word reverse engineering applied to pastries.
Not a shortcut here.
But that's what they talked about. This woman in Manila.
A patent suit about
she it. Sent somebody to bakery in New York and had him fly Cronuts back to Manila, so she could reverse engineer the Cronut. He makes his own marshmallow. That's not as hard as it looks. It's actually fun to make marshmallows if you ever want to do that. Look at that.
Yeah, and handmade marshmallows are good.
Oh, they're so good. Look at they're square.
Willow wood branches that we get, and we cut them, and then we smoke them with apple wood.
He's smoking them with apple wood.
So we have
that's freaky.
This is a little too good.
Yeah, it is.
So those are smoked. The skewers are smoked.
Torch.
That adds $2.
This is kind of amazing.
I love Zagat. This is good. Google, good job. So there really is more editorial on this.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, when we say Google doesn't own content.
Part of it is the marshmallow. They
do.
Boy, they're big into content.
Inside, you really
and, it, well, we'll talk about this okay, we can stop this now. Well, yes. It's making me hungry. We can talk about this when we come back, but they're obviously getting into hardware, too, in a big way. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Let's continue with the change.
Sorry for that little detail.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So we talked about last week how Android 4.3, the Photosphere feature, got a lot better.
Yeah.
Google just rolled out a new site called Views. It's a maps site. If you go to google.com/maps/views, it's a kind of a featured collection of user-submitted Photospheres. So you can go and you can see some really cool photospheres of places like the Grand Canyon and beautiful islands, Queenstown, Tunisia, all around the world. So kind of fun to see what kind of stuff people are submitting.
And wow, this is amazing. Find them on the maps. Yeah.
You can find them via the maps now too, right?
Yeah.
This is just kind of a special sort of.
This
like,
is a gallery.
Yeah, it's a gallery kind of featuring.
I've apparently picked the ugliest place in the world. Let me see if I can. I please go back. I don't want to be in Cairns. All right, there's the Grand Canyon, though. So, is this built into this Photosphere app? You'll have to tell us because I don't have a Google Experience phone. Is this?
Yeah, you can submit to Maps. You can submit a Photosphere to Maps pretty easily. I'll tell you the honest truth, I haven't done it. Right. But it definitely, it always kind of felt like Photospheres was Google's way of equipping everybody with that, that 360 camera just in there.
Credit
in
to Microsoft, because they have for a long time had this capability and did have the way to submit it and add it to Bing Maps and stuff. It was more than just this Photosphere. It was really quite an amazing way to put pictures together. I can't remember the name of it, but... These are gorgeous.
Yeah, that when amazing. You stitch the photos together.
Yeah.
That brilliant guy did that demo.
Yeah, it was really an impressive technology. Photosynth, that's it.
Photosynth.
Yeah, this is kind of a poor man's Photosynth.
Thank you, Mike P. Or Winster. So this is a poor man's Photosynth. Exactly. And let's see, what else we got? Oh, last thing, Google... released an official Google AdSense Android app. So you can go to the Play Store, you can find the AdSense app if you're running AdSense. And version one, which is this initial version, it provides earnings information, custom URL channels, ad units, and site reports and payment alerts. So you get your AdSense updates right there on your phone. You can search for that in Google Play. I haven't done much with AdSense in a while, so I haven't actually had a chance to test it out. But if you're running a site with AdSense or running AdSense ads, check that out. And that's all I got.
And that, play the drums, is our... Google.
Somebody killed the drummer.
He kind of fell over. Change log. Thank you very, very much. We're going to take a break when we come back. Let's talk about... there's so much to talk about. Chromecast, now that it's been out for a while, people have had it. Kindle 7. And my
stuff, NSA stuff, as you were talking about.
And more NSA stuff, as there always more NSA stuff, it seems like. I want to talk to you about this idea that Google is now becoming a hardware company, because I have to say, they have some pretty damn good hardware. And tomorrow, we're going to add one more piece to that puzzle, but we'll talk about that, too. First, a word from our sponsor, Squarespace.com. I'm not giving Dan Benjamin's code this time.
Fair enough.
Dan and I both love Squarespace. Dan's a web developer, so it's kind of neat that he actually embraces Squarespace, because this really puts web developers in some ways out of business. You can be your own web developer even if you don't know CSS or JavaScript or even HTML, because with Squarespace you have point-and-click access to the most amazing templates. Each of them can be totally customized. So I'm going to pick one at random here. This is called Avenue, one of the beautiful new Squarespace templates. And then you can scroll down and look at a variety of websites using this. Not just, you can say, how are portfolios using Avenue? How are stores using Avenue for e-commerce? Here's a website, Crane & Johnson, that they use Avenue to sell women's clothing online. It's just, and everyone looks unique. Everyone looks great, stylish, modern. And you can try it yourself for free. All you have to do is visit squarespace.com, click the try it free button, pick a template. And by the way, the beauty of this is, as with all good content hosting services, and Squarespace is both web hosting and content management, the content is completely separate from the presentation. So if tomorrow you want to use a different template, no problem. Just press a button and suddenly you look completely different, but your content remains there. The SEO remains the same. They've even got importers, which makes it very simple to move from an existing site. And notice they've got a, I love it, they've got a Nexus 7 here. they're showing that your site looks great not only on a 27-inch screen, but on an iPhone, on an Android phone, on a tablet. Every Squarespace template is mobile enhanced so that it looks great at all sizes. Completely responsive design. Now, if you are a developer, there's plenty for you too. They've got a complete development a platform that includes a color coded syntax, color coding in the editor, supports CSS and JavaScript. You've got plugins for all of the social networks, complete import and export capability. You're never trapped at Squarespace. Although I don't know why you'd ever want to leave. It's completely SEO optimized. Your site can be totally crawled with sitemap and everything for Google, Yahoo, Bing, and all the other search engines. It's the hosting, the best hosting in the world, plus the content management system that makes Squarespace unique. Do it for 2 weeks free. You don't need to give them a credit card. You don't need to give them anything but your email address so that they can send you the password when you forget it. That's it. And after 2 weeks, if you decide to buy, I think you're going to be blown away by the price. As little as $8 a month with the basic annual plan. I would recommend the unlimited plan. That's $16 a month when you pay annually. And it gives you something I know of no other host that does this. Unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill. Even if you become the most popular site on the internet, it's going to cost you $16 a month. Unlimited storage, pages, galleries, blogs, contributors. You even when you buy the annual plan, get a custom domain name free, and they'll hook it all up for you. Of course, the best customer support in the world. And workshops, too. Free workshops, seminars, so that you can learn the ins and outs. You can really perfect what you're doing. If you decide you want to do e-commerce, that's $24 a month. And it includes everything, unlimited physical and digital products, a store that's good on mobile as well as on desktops, inventory tracking. Yes, they support that. Tax calculations. That's a big deal now. And they do it all for you. Shipping and coupon controls. Squarespace.com. You got to try it out. Very, very good stuff. The best, frankly, for your next website. Bring your site over if you've got one and try it out today. Squarespace.com. If you decide you want to buy, we're going to get you 10% off your first purchase on a new account. And that could be a lot of savings if you buy the annual plan. But you got to use our offer code for the month of July. It's TWIG7. Seventh month. TWIG7 at Squarespace.com.
I wish there were a Squarespace button for life. I could just hit it and look entirely different tomorrow.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
The content's the same, yeah, but the presentation
is different. Separate the content layer from
presentation layer. We ought to do that. Right. We really ought to do that. In for humans. Life, yes. Mm-hmm. In humans. So let's talk about hardware, because yes, last week, of course, with Sundar Pichai, we saw a new Nexus tablet that is arguably the best small tablet made.
You said on Twit this week, I think you have no reason to buy an iPad mini.
You know, I can give you one reason. It's 4:3, the aspect ratio. But the only other reason is if you're trapped in the ecosystem. If you are trapped in iTunes and you've spent so much money on iTunes content, but even the music now is unprotected in iTunes, so it would have to be TV or movies, I guess. But it's not like you're going to throw away that capability. You just can't do it on the tablet. It is, the screen is gorgeous. It's very fast. I've been playing games on it. The OpenGL support is superb. It's just great hardware. And then they do the Chromecast, which admittedly right now isn't much. It's not much to pay for either. It's $35. But I think if it looks like it's sold out, do we have any thoughts about what that means, how many of the units they might have sold? There are a couple of data points. One, Netflix, the Netflix deal is over.
Right.
Like the first day. And there's at least, what, 3 or 4 weeks now to get one.
I think Best Buy's were getting a couple dozen of them. They sold out quickly.
You think 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, a million? How many did they sell?
I think they were obviously surprised because they had to pull back the Netflix deal. I think it took off even more than they knew.
Yeah.
How are they surprised, though? I mean, these things are so cheap. They should have made, gazillions of them. I don't know. It surprised me they sold out so quickly, not they sold out, but that there's a delay so quickly.
There's a magic price point. If you are at a certain price point, we know that it's $99 for tablets, right? Because even Microsoft's Surface RT sells out at $99. And the Playbook, the BlackBerry Playbook, $99, it's sold out. So there's a magic price point. I think $35 is so low that it's an impulse purchase.
And you know, it's the other thing is, so I got one before I got the two others. It just reversed the order. And so I plugged it in that night. And the next day I was driving myself nuts because I was sitting in my office and I wanted to just cast stuff to the TV there and I couldn't do it.
Oh, interesting.
It's really addictive. Though, however, that's the good news. The bad news is when I got the other two, I went to the bedroom, put it in there. The Wi-Fi is not superb there. Doesn't work so well.
Yeah, you need to have good Wi-Fi, I think.
But, and I, you know, some other bugs. If I accidentally close the window on the laptop, there's no way to control what's on the TV.
Really? Even if you open the window, you can't get the control back?
I didn't think so. I tried. Maybe I just got it wrong.
I don't know.
If I just go to YouTube, I don't know what window I'm getting open. So, you know, it's not perfect, but it really changes how I think of TV. And it changes, very importantly for Google, the notion of discovering TV. I frankly didn't use YouTube all that much. Now I'm subscribing to things to find more stuff because it's just so easy and wonderful to put it across. Watching Twit this way is great.
Think about you. The YouTube thing you said is very interesting because isn't this one of, I mean, Google's put $500 million or something into the idea of making YouTube be more like a real TV network, not the crotch shot channel, but like real content. And this is a big piece of the puzzle and it's on your big screen easily.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It makes all the difference. And even the stuff you got to put up, you know, without having the it's not Chromecast capable yet. Works fine.
I think the other very innovative thing is that you're not controlling it with a remote.
Oh.
You're not controlling
it. The remote is great.
You look it up on your phone and you send it. And it's just a natural way to do it. You have to have a smartphone, an iOS or Android smartphone. But I have to think. So the reason I asked the number is, let's say they sold 250,000. I think that's not unreasonable. That is enough, I think, for companies to sit up and say, oh, that would be in our interest to add a Chromecast button.
Well, and now the rumor, at least, is that HBO Go is...
They said it. They admitted it.
They said it out loud. Okay, yeah. Good. Yep.
They said they're going to do it.
That they're going to support it.
Yep.
That's great.
Plex is going to do it. Now, that's interesting because that means all your media will be playable through the Chromecast if you use Plex. Vimeo.
Whoa. So in the Plex player?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the Plex Media Player on your desktop, you can then send...
You'd have to have Plex. You'd have to have a Plex. You have to Plex Media Server somewhere. But you can then control it through Chromecast. So you'll have the Plex app. This is how I would imagine. You'd have the Plex app on your device. Mm-hmm. You'd have a Plex server somewhere, a desktop computer or a network-attached storage. And you would then fire up Plex on your iPhone or your Android phone. Mm-hmm. Press the Chromecast button. Choose your content from your media server. Put it on your screen.
And Google is going to approve that? There still is an approval process, right? I mean, didn't Google say this?
I don't think so.
They have to give you a certificate or something.
Well, they do?
They do, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But why the hell wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Right? Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, no.
Unless they get pressure from their partners.
Right.
But even if it just does what it does right now, it's a very good. By the way, Netflix on it looks gorgeous. Here's the one button if they do this, it's done. Is Amazon?
Yes.
The fact that
Amazon sold them tells me there's a dalliance there.
Yeah, because Amazon knows how many they sold.
Oh yeah.
So here's from Dan McDermott on Google Plus. A supervisor at Amazon told me I ordered the last Chromecast and they had sold. Amazon says 500,000 to 700,000 until they ran out on day two. That's Amazon alone. Now, Amazon knows that number, right? Admittedly, Amazon, it's a little bit against Amazon's business. I don't know. Is it against their business model to put it on Chromecast? I'm talking about Amazon streaming video.
No. How is that against their business model?
They put it on my smart TV. Panasonic does it. Everybody does it.
Right. No.
Yeah. I mean, they're giving
people...
They want
you to be a happy customer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if the Kindle app runs anywhere, right, why wouldn't they want people to be able to watch their Amazon Instant Streaming? I bought a bunch of stuff on Amazon Instant Streaming. I should be able to watch it wherever I want. I mean, why, you know...
Why not?
And that's only going to make me buy more stuff from Amazon if I know I can watch it anywhere.
Well, if Amazon sold 500,000, let's take the lower number...
Yeah, if they sold 500,000.
Google must have sold that many at least.
Yeah. At least. But you would think that they would probably have double what they're going to give Amazon, right?
Now, remember, we're talking about this in a universe where 13 million Apple TVs have been sold total, about 5 million Rokus total. If you sold a million on the first week of anything,
that's incredible.
You're a player.
Yeah, that is something. That is something.
And but as always, you don't know how much it could have sold because they run out of
stock.
It's just such a lost opportunity. But this, somebody pointed out, now we understand. I don't think we said this last week. Now we understand. Everybody made fun of when Eric Schmidt said by the summer of 2012, a little off there, the majority of televisions you see in stores will have Google TV embedded in it. Now we made fun of that because not Google TV.
We did laugh at it.
We did laugh at it. We should have laughed at it. But you know what? In the end.
We didn't understand how.
Yeah.
Another measure of its success is the fact that they're selling on Craigslist for $75 to $90 or eBay for $75 to $90.
Well, that's up. It was when I blogged that, it was $50.
Yeah.
Plus I hear in eBay UK, people are trying to spend like £90.
It would work in the UK. You can't buy it from the UK, but I see no reason why it wouldn't work.
Oh, yeah. People from other countries are trying to buy it. I see that.
Netflix, you'd have to have a special account. But YouTube should work. The tab thing should work. I doubt that it would. I don't know. Would it check? I don't think it would say, no. Where are you? Are you in England? Stop.
and people are selling them for more on eBay if you have the Netflix code.
Ooh.
$88.
It's worth $88 if you get the net, because that takes $24 off of the
price. Yeah.
By the way, I got the email. I get a code for each Chromecast. You can't apply them all at once, but it sounds to me as if you could wait the 3 months and then apply the next one, mm-hmm. unless they expire them. Because what I do, I applied one, and I have an existing account. Great. Next 3 months are free of Netflix. Then I tried to apply the next one. I said, you can only have one applied at a time. But that did not apply. It implied that I could then apply it later.
How many family members can use a Netflix account?
I don't know, quite a few. We have separate logins for all my family members.
Well, for the same account?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that way,
you don't get the same recommendations.
Exactly. I don't want their recommendations.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Oh.
The codes expire end of 2013, so I'll get at least 6 months. So that's pretty good.
So I count down to the people who are now going to go on and start asking you for the extra codes.
I guess I should give those away, shouldn't I? Because I bought 5. By the way, that's, you want one reason why you sold. I bet a lot of people bought multiple ones. You bought 2 by accident, yeah. Right? But
No. I bought 2 and then saw you buying more, and I went back and bought a third. Because this is what men do.
Oh, if Leo has 3, I'm going to get 3.
We out-shop each other.
Well, I wanted one for every TV in my house. That's 3. And then I wanted, and then I got 2 for Lisa because she's got 2. Because you know what happens, and this is what you experienced at work. You get used to it. You know what? It's great, and an unexpected. The Google Music works with it, and as Sundar, whoever was talking, said. I do have my best stereo equipped. My TVs are with the good stereo, right? So I can listen to my music. It's been great.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't tried that yet. And Pandora to come.
Yeah, but I like, I really like the Google Music Radio.
Really?
Yeah.
It's great. I do too. I just, what am I in the mood for? And it just plays. It's great.
Because it's on your TV, they put nice big album art up at first. With all the information, and then it shrinks down, and there's a screensaver. You get a nice. It's even nicer than Pandora. It's beautiful.
I'm a cheapskate, and when they charged me the $7.99, when the trial ended, I was kind of like, okay, I'll keep it.
I canceled Spotify, so I saved a couple of bucks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, did you see this post on GTV Hacker that the Chromecast is more Android than Chrome OS under the hood?
Yeah.
It's a modified Google TV release.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So we were talking about last night on All About Android, why they chose to go with the Chrome brand versus the Android or Nexus brand.
Yeah, because they really said this is Chrome OS, didn't they?
Yeah, they
on the Play Store, it sits next to the Chrome devices.
Probably semantic, right? Because Chrome OS is very similar to Android from, the bottom up. it's only the top layers that are different, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I guess it makes sense. I mean, I don't know. Look, I don't know what the internals of Chrome OS. I'm not sure what the real low level code is like and how close.
It's Linux, right? It's a Linux kernel.
It's Linux, right?
And so going up to that, so it's, you know, the Linux kernel, and then there's Dalvik on top of that. That's the Java engine, right? Is Dalvik on Chrome OS, or is it just Android?
No, Dalvik is there to run the Java bytecode, right?
Right.
Not, yeah, that's the Java runtime. They're not running Android apps here. This is just Chrome.
So if it doesn't have Dalvik, it's not Android.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's right. That's a good argument. I mean, for me, it's a less of a technical discussion and more of a marketing brand discussion. Like,
exactly.
How come they didn't decide to go with the Nexus dongle or the Nexus, I don't know, whatever, versus the Chrome brand? And a lot of people have been saying, well, the Google TV brand has been terrible. They want to sell it cross-platform. They want iOS users to understand that they also can use it. Chrome is cross-platform and Android is not. But it was just an interesting branding choice. Go ahead,
Jeff. Isn't it this simple? It's an add-on to Chrome. It's a Chrome extension.
Yeah.
Right.
Also,
it communicates what you do with it more easily, right? I'm flinging this from Chrome. This is Chrome to Chrome.
Right. I think that's what it is. I think it's functional.
Chrome to Chrome. It's casting your Chrome. Yeah.
Casting your Chrome. Yes. It's a remote tab. It's a remote Chrome tab. Right. Essentially,
you're right. Well, I guess when I'm using Netflix, that's not the case. When I'm using the YouTube player, it's not the case. But otherwise, it wants me to say this is just an extension of your laptop, folks.
Right. This is a tab on
and
your
it
TV.
Doesn't. And I'm reading the GTV Hacker post. It doesn't have Dalvik or Bionic on it, so it really is. I mean, I think that's semantics to say that it's more Android or more Google TV than it is Chrome OS. If you have Linux, that could be called Chrome OS.
Yeah. Did you see the Easter eggs on the device? The hardware Easter eggs? It's on the rundown.
Oh, I saw this in the rundown. I didn't get a chance to look at them. Look at it yet.
What is it?
There's a Konami code somewhere.
Oh, I did the Konami code. Yeah. I did that one. But that's on the app.
There's two others. Just look it up on the thing.
Okay.
Because it's visual.
We got to demo it, huh? Let me get it here.
No. It's the first hardware. You're saying Google's a hardware company. This is a hardware Easter egg.
Wow. scanning here.
The model number.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Here's three. So I want to go home now. Wait a minute. No, I have one on my desk. I'll do this here. All right.
It's right there.
Okay. This is from, let's see. Okay.
Go back up.
See what do you mean on the device?
On the device,
there's an Easter egg. If you zoom in a little bit, you'll see. Oh, yeah, somebody told me about this, that the model number is H2G2-42. Wait a minute now. Now, let's test your geek knowledge. If you really are a geek, you should be able to identify what H2G2-42 is. And I want to tell you, when Jason told me about this yesterday, I identified it, or Jeff or somebody, identified it immediately. If you're a geek, you should be able to. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, H2G2, and of course 42 is the answer to the question of life, the universe, and
life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, that is. I love you, Google.
Isn't that beautiful?
Pretty great.
Isn't that just beautiful?
It's pretty great.
You know, it doesn't take much. What?
Also has
imagine any other? Imagine Sony. Imagine somebody goes in and says, "Boss, you know, on this new thing, this Walkman, I want to do this. I want to put a little joke on it."
No, you cannot.
Yeah, I mean, every bit of hardware they've shipped has had some sort of Easter egg, right? So there's this, and the Chrome, the Pixel had the Konami code. Even the CR48 had that hidden developer switch kind of to unlock it, you know, inside the bottom. I guess that wasn't really an Easter egg, but it was still kind of a neat little developer switch.
Even their bids for the 700 megahertz spectrum had Easter eggs in it, right?
Really?
Their bid was Pi.
Well, that's right. That's right.
$3.14159 billion. So there it is. Yeah, it's kind of hard to see, but H2G2. I verify that. And the IC and the FCC ID and the model number all are in there. It's in the FCC ID.
Yeah,
that's hysterical. All right, now you said that on the power adapter, there's something here.
That's it.
Yeah, the power adapter's a model number. MST3.
Oh my God. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Okay. You win.
Yeah.
You win. Resistance is futile.
this might be one of the best devices Google has shipped. I can't decide if the Nexus 7 or this is the best device that Google's ever shipped.
Both got last week, and I have to say it puts them in a position.
No, Gina.
I know.
It's the Pixel.
I know.
Not even close. I like the Pixel. I like the Pixel, but
best taking price into our criteria.
Thank you. Well, do note that Google does much better with products of similar capabilities when they price it amazingly low, because they didn't do too well with the Q, remember? But the Chromecast at 1/10 the price seems to have done quite well. A Pixel at $1,500, not such a big seller, but you do it at $200, $250, Chrome.
You know, back to your point about being a hardware company, who would think that Google as a company would put out the best iterations?
Isn't that interesting?
Right?
And stand by, because tomorrow, starting in the morning and throughout the morning in New York City, Google is going to finally take the wraps off of the Moto X. And I say Google because Google owns Motorola, and this is the first Motorola phone.
If the people who are going to that thing are walking away with them, and I'm not invited in and can't get one, I'm pissed.
I know. We got to get both you and Gina one because, well, I can't tell you why.
Oh,
I hate
it.
But what we're going to do is embargo is my tongue will be untied at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So we're going to do a special. I'm hoping we're going to get one between now and then. We have been begging and pleading the whole time.
For all this suffering, this should be the price they pay.
But let me say this about that.
Yeah.
While there are many questions that I still have, because I played with it for an hour, but I didn't have the chance to use it as a real phone for a week or two. So there's lots of things. I mean, it could have terrible phone reception. I don't know. The speakers could be muddy. I don't know that stuff. There's some questions in my mind about battery life. I wasn't able to use it long enough to verify, but I do have some initial impressions, which I'll talk about tomorrow, on battery life. I have some knowledge about that. It looks to me that this will be very likely to be one of the best phones, if not the best phone out there.
Wow.
For a number of reasons, some of which have not been fully revealed yet.
But the leaks are not that impressive.
Okay, let's talk about PC Magazine. Sasha Segan. Who is Sasha? I don't know if he's a boy or a girl. But he does, or she does, very good mobile stories. Let me see if I can find this story here. He says this as if, why am I getting a pop-up? Go away. He says this as if he is revealing something that he's been told. It says, the title is Motorola Reveals More X8 Chip Details. I'm told that I cannot confirm leaks until tomorrow or deny leaks until tomorrow.
Well, gosh, Leo, what does that nice fella say?
Let me tell you what Sasha, and now that I see the picture, I'm pretty sure it's a guy or it could be a really ugly girl. But that's a dude, right? Okay,
yeah,
you never know. So the X8 is in the Droid Ultra Mini and Max. And he says it's anticipated to be under the hood of the new Moto X. Can't confirm or deny that. But listen to what he says, and I think it might be germane. The X8 is in the processor, and it's not an SoC, a system on a chip. It appears to be shorthand for combining a customized Snapdragon S4 Pro system on a chip. That's a quad-core, top of the line, by the way. That is not middle of the line Snapdragon. With two additional custom DSPs, one of which can function essentially as a low-power CPU.
Which is how it can listen to you all the time, if it could do that.
He quotes Iqbal Arshad, who's an engineer at Motorola, senior VP of engineering. If you look at the X8 mobile computing system, Iqbal says, it has a cluster of processors and then some separate elements of the system. The goal was to move away from a primarily CPU-based architecture to save power and do, quote, intelligent, probabilistic computing.
Ooh, not just listening to you, but anticipating certain things at certain times.
I don't know really.
Not that you would
know. I don't
know.
Actually know what he means by that.
Oh, okay.
Probabilistic computing.
Well, okay. I'm going too far, I'm sure, because I like you liked Wave. what that means to me is that Google's intent is always to intuit your intent.
Yeah.
And so if it's constantly computing about you,
well, remember
what time it is, you know, it can do things.
Remember what I said to Brad Fitzpatrick? Was it Fitzpatrick? Or no, it was Horowitz, Bradley Horowitz, when we were leaving
yes,
Google I.O. I said, boy, you know, it would be so cool if Google did a Google Now, Google Plus phone.
Facebook Home.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
So he winked and nudged and said, yeah, just wait. But I would guess that the next generation Google / Motorola phones, and that now that Google has a handset manufacturer, it behooves them to put the Nexus line on that manufacturer. I understand that they don't want to piss off anybody, but Samsung's eating their lunch at this point, and Samsung's really making more and more noise about kind of going their own way. They're having a developers conference in the fall, yeah. And I have to say I'm more and more dissatisfied. The more I use the GS4, the more it's crudded up. And every once in a while, it overheats. The battery just drains in a minute because there's something running on it that Samsung put on there. The camera has never worked right from day one. Samsung, I think, has gone down a very bad road. And it would be smart of Google. And if I'm Google, I'm looking, geez, you know, we don't want this to represent us, but it does to half of all smartphone manufacturers. They've got, or buyers, they've got Samsungs. This is now becoming the face of Android, synonymous with Android. What are we going to do about that? And I think this is Motorola is the opportunity for them to at least say, here is what another way to go with Android would be.
This is the premium Android experience.
Perfect way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Boy,
mm-hmm.
That's the phrase they should be using.
The funny thing is premium equals pure, not messed up with the things you add that you call premium, other
yep.
companies.
Yep. I was not a fan of a pure Google experience for a long time, but 4.2.2 and later, it's good.
Oh, it is. I'm converted. A friend of mine got a Samsung phone, and I was trying to help him with it because he couldn't figure out. He somehow turned off the ringer.
Horrible.
And it was giving me a headache trying to get it. Was like Microsoft.
Horrible. So, and you know, I talked to the guy who invented Moto Blur. I said, why'd you do that to people?
Did you really?
Yeah. And he said, I understand. He said, but it at that time with Gingerbread, Android wasn't there yet. We felt we had to customize heavily to give consumers something they could use. He said, it's not that way anymore. And I agree with him. Mm-hmm. So I think that I would just expect the Moto X to be exactly what you said. Google's kind of underscoring. I don't know if they'll call it a Nexus. They probably won't. But this is the premium Android experience. This is how it should be done. And what better way to show that than Google's premier mobile product, Google Now?
Here's a question. So will they sell it on the Play Store?
Oh, definitely. Why wouldn't they? They definitely will.
I think so, but this seems to me they're kind of saying nothing there. If you go to the Motorola site, it's all Moto X.
I mean, I can't imagine that they wouldn't. Leo's got something about this. He's got something.
I'm sorry. What'd you say? I was just having a long drink of water.
We speculated a while ago that the reason why the HTC One and the GS4 and the Play Store with like the Google edition is the kind of their way to make nice, preemptively make nice.
That's what I think.
With these other manufacturers, because now they're going to hit with the Moto X and it's going to be the Android phone to have.
So I want it tomorrow.
Yeah, well, they'll announce it tomorrow. I don't think it's available right away. I'm not sure, but I think that you're going to have to wait a little bit. There is a leak from, what was that, Best Buy or one of the retailers that said August 23rd.
Ooh.
So you might have to wait a few weeks. I have to say, if Sasha Segan is right, this X8 chip means you can't compare head-to-head with other phones. You know, you can't say, well, that's a middle-of-the-line chip or it's a middle-of-the-line RAM because it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'd be smart to say, look, Apple says this all the time. Don't look at specs. Look at what we can do.
That's fair.
That's fair, right? The spec you should look at is battery life and how it integrates into my life. Does it work for me?
Yeah.
Hmm. So it's going to be running 4-3, right? Oh, so the leaks say 4-3 or 4-2.
Well, they'd be crazy to ship it with 4-2-2, but I don't know.
Right, there would be. It's
I could tell you 4-3. This. I could tell you this. The phones we looked at had 4-2-2 on it, but they hadn't announced 4-3 yet. So
yeah, okay, okay. So if it were the Google Now version of Facebook Home, which is kind of what it sounds like it is, the thing that sort of anticipates and listens and, yeah, I wonder if that they're going to ship it with a special launcher, or is it going to be a special, not, I don't want to say skin, because that sounds too much like what we're complaining about.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I think Facebook Home was a huge flop, right?
Yeah.
It was.
So it was. I think that they wouldn't do that. You know, like have Google Plus launcher. I think it's pretty clear people want access to the functionality of the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now is pretty accessible.
But will Google Now have new capabilities based on this phone's new capabilities of being more aware, always listening, et cetera? I mean, am I going to say something to my wife and get a Google Now card with, like, news results about that? I don't know.
No.
I know.
I don't know for a fact, but if they did that, that would be crazy. What I'm pretty sure is the case is that it's not listening online. It's listening locally until it hears the key phrase, and then it then opens up a channel to the service.
They were very clear that that's the case at Google.
It's not keeping track of what
Otherwise,
you're saying.
It's going to freak people
out. Oh, nobody would
want that. No. I was kind of joking. But, you know, I had this Google Now experience this past week. So my terrible, embarrassing, shameful, guilty pleasure right now on TV is...
Happened to me, too. I know exactly what you're about to say. What's your guilty pleasure?
I'm really sorry ahead of time for saying this. The Bachelorette. Okay.
Oh, that's really sad.
So I've been watching The Bachelorette.
I know. And guess who knows what she's watching?
Yes, because I, of course, searched. You know, there's a blogger who, like, basically spoils the whole season by saying who she chooses. And I had Googled the spoilers, like, a couple of days ago. Or it was a couple of weeks ago. I haven't done it in a while. And then a news story about The Bachelorette came out. And I picked up my phone. And Google Now said, there's a new news story about The Bachelorette spoilers we thought you'd be interested in. Here it is. And don't you know that I tapped that card?
It worked.
Instantaneously.
And did you say at the time, thank you, Google?
Oh, I...
thank you for spying on me? How did it know?
It was based on my searches. Like, I had searched for
See, here's what I thought you were going to say. So last night, my Google Now pops up and says, oh, I see you have a TV online. Would you like to...
Whoa.
On the Google Now, it's not here anymore because I swiped it away, but on the Google Now, it says you have your Panasonic Viera is online because they're both on the same Wi-Fi network. And, and then press this button to see so we can see what you're listening to. And I did. And it said, no, sorry, you can only identify live TV. I was watching The Sopranos, so they said we can only identify live TV. But had I been watching The Bachelorette,
it would have given you, it would have done like actors or whatever. Yeah. They're not actors on that show, but yeah.
Oh, profiles, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Well,
Gina,
yeah,
do
right.
not deceive yourself.
And professional wrestling is not real, Gina. They're not in love and they don't hurt each other.
But what's, it would be funny if it said, really, Gina, is that what you're watching?
I really wish that the card had judged me. Like, really, you could spend your time.
I would have accepted that. I would have fully accepted that. The movie line from Annie Hall, and you're standing in the movie line, and some jerk is talking about Marshall McLuhan, and the phone comes up and says, no, he's wrong. He doesn't know the work at all.
Love that. Would love it. Yeah, what this would have done is listen to the audio, said, and I did press the button, and it listened to the audio and said, I don't know what this is, but you have to be watching live TV. And I said, oh, that's why it's The Sopranos. It's a 13-year-old TV show. It doesn't know from that. I was wondering. I thought, this is interesting. Would they have audio clips from, audio from every TV show ever broadcast? Wouldn't that be cool?
So I don't understand. So it would listen to the audio, and then so it would know what you were watching, and then what?
Well, I presume a card would pop up with information.
Information about the show.
And forevermore, because now it goes, you watch The Bachelor. Why don't we pop up a notification on your calendar? Now, one of the nice things about now is you can always swipe it away and say, I don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, there's a new season starting. Oh, hey, there's a special. There's another show going on. Yep.
I think that's great. I don't mind giving them that information.
Despite... The shame that I felt tapping on the car. No, it's great. It's great. And Google knows that people surf the web while they watch TV, right?
So does that happen? Look up stuff. So now here's a question. If I watch something on Chromecast, Is it going to start showing up in Google Now? Of course it is.
Well, Google knows, right?
Google knows.
This is a question. I mean, I assume that Google knows if you cast something.
Well, that's the whole point of this unified privacy policy they implemented back, you know, a year or two ago. By the way, just in case you didn't know it, all of our services are sharing information.
Yeah.
And what difference does it make? Because the NSA knows anyway.
I'm not worried about the Google when you got the NSA to worry about, right?
From a technical standpoint, though, I mean, you're on the same Wi-Fi network and it's all happening locally. Google doesn't have to know.
Yeah, but don't you think it's interesting that Google Now knew that my TV was, I mean, it saw my TV.
It knew. Yeah, it saw your TV on your local Wi-Fi network and it told it. And Google Now pushed down from the cloud. Yeah, they're watching. They know what's going on.
No, don't say it that way because it implies there is a human watching. It's algorithmically noting what we're doing and providing us with information based on that. And I don't have the same problem with that. And you know what's interesting? I don't even have the problem if it were judgmental because I wouldn't mind if this phone kind of had a personality.
Yeah.
And I kind of could kind of interact with it. It could be my new friend.
I could tell Google Now, scold me when I'm watching The Bachelorette.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Tell me about all the other things that I could be doing during The Bachelorette. If it did it in a fun way, yeah. If Google could get down, yeah, like a fun editorial voice, and you could tell it, hey, stop me from doing this or encourage me, you know, to do this. If I'm at the gym, you know, give me kudos. But if I'm watching The Bachelorette, like, kick me in the butt.
How far is that from putting a reference to Mystery Science Theater 3000 on the serial number on the power supply? It's not far. Google already is starting to sneak editorial voice into everything. Mm-hmm. And probably with an eye towards, yeah, it'd be kind of fun to have some personality. You could choose the personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah, Quantified Self certainly follows, right? I mean, the latitude, all the data that latitude collected on you, right? And that you knew, I spend this much time at work, this much time at home, right? I mean, that seems like making that data useful to the user and saying, hey, here's what you should do with this. Stop watching The Bachelorette. That would be useful.
You want to take that to an extreme. You take that to an extreme, this will freak people out. But at some level, there are predictors about things like depression.
Right. Mm-hmm. It could cheer you up because you're lonely.
It could warn you. It could make you aware of it.
You're sleeping an awful lot.
Pattern.
Are you
this
okay?
Happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why do you think I have my scale tweet my weight? It's humiliating. But the reason I do it is because I want support from my network of friends and acquaintances and people I've never met who will say, hey, Leo, you're getting a little chunky. I get that a lot.
I mean, you're also on live video all day long.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get a lot of commentary about
it. And it's good. I don't mind that. I'm used to it now.
Leo will be doing shows soon on a treadmill.
Yeah. Oh, believe me. I mean, I'm sitting there. I was eating tomato soup yesterday, and Dr. Mom in the chat room says, you know, that's full of carbohydrates. I said, what? No, it's soup. She said, you know, a tomato is a fruit. So you know what I did? I Googled the nutrition information.
Well, you've got an amazing community here.
I want Dr. Mom in my phone.
Well, yeah. and you can pay Dr. Mom can make money for this. She can be
she could.
Cannibal Circuit.
I'm feeling maybe I have been brainwashed at this point. And, you know, as a journalist, I really want to maintain my objectivity and my integrity. But I can't help but be very, and I hate to admit it, very excited about what I see coming out of Google right now.
Yeah, same here.
I don't want to like it. I want to find something wrong with it.
Well, and something else you can get mad about.
What's that?
Although they responded. Their terms of service for Google Fiber and net neutrality.
Yeah, this bugs the hell out of me.
Yeah,
but they had an answer and said, no, it's just standard stuff, but they shouldn't be standard.
So if you have Google Fiber, if you're lucky enough to have Google Gigabit Fiber, and of course that would be in Kansas City, soon Provo, Utah, and Austin, Texas. Dan Benjamin, by the way, was glowing about that. When he was in here on Sunday, we're going to get food. That actually would be a competitive advantage for him. Oh, stop laughing. Whose side are you on? In the terms of service, thank God, he's not allowed to create a server. Now, it is true, Google says, well, everybody does that. Comcast won't let me run a server, a mail server or a web server. But, you know, there's all kinds of servers. If you're running a Minecraft server or...
Well, then it came back and said, no, we don't... Non-commercial games, home monitoring, all that stuff is fine.
Well, but who's to make the... You know, it's up to a Google employee to decide. I run a drop cam. We're running drop cams here. Those are servers, so I can see my camera.
Right.
Lots of stuff is servers. What is Google saying?
Oh, you're trying to get me to actually give you information. Oh.
No, man. I think that what there's...
I hate this,
we got the rule, but don't worry, we're not going to enforce it. Pisses the hell out of me. Because that's not how it works. Google says, we're not violating net neutrality. Well, yes, I guess you are. I mean, look, any commercial service and any web, I certainly don't complain that Comcast does this. Anybody who offers internet service can, I think, quite reasonably say, look, we don't want you running a mail server because you could be a spammer, or running a web server because there's security issues from your house. We're selling this for non-commercial use. That, I don't think that's unreasonable. But
what's the security issue of running a web server from your house?
Well, there are all sorts of issues with, you know, as soon as you're running a server, you're letting people into your home network. Mm-hmm. So it's a security issue for you.
Right.
It's a security issue for them because they're, in effect, hosting a server. And if you're serving malware, they're serving malware.
Okay.
If you're sending spam, they're sending spam.
Right. But Leo, if Comcast or Google, whichever one, on the exact same network, on the exact same service, if I have a business, I'm sure I'm allowed to run a server.
That's what Google says. We do offer a business class.
But that's where it's quizzling of them. What's the actual technology difference, Dan? If I'm Joe's Bagel Shop,
you're paying more for the business class.
That's the quizzling part. For something that actually doesn't cost us anything more, we're going to charge you more because we can. That's what cable companies do. That's not what Google should do. That's the essence of net neutrality.
Well, that's why it bothered me. I understand when Comcast does that. There's even technical reasons why they might want to do that. But Google's supposed to be a little, you know, stand up for net. Yeah. This is their response to Ars Technica's article. Google is a strong supporter of the open internet, and our stance here hasn't changed. This is a standard practice of network management. And as we said in our filing, the policy does not prevent legal and non-commercial use of applications such as multiplayer gaming, video conferencing, and home security. You know, there's lots of servers. Slingbox is a server. There's lots of servers people run in their home.
Yeah, that's such a cop-out. They need to stand up and define what they're talking about here. Everything is a server. Everything should be a server, right? I mean,
that's exactly right, Gina. Your refrigerator becomes a server.
Right.
Right.
Everything should be a server. I run a server on I do development, web development, because the Chromecast is a server. I mean, you know, it's a peer, it's a node. I don't know. This is BS. We should call them out on this. They should rewrite what exactly they mean by server. They should define what they mean by server.
This is when Google gets in trouble, right?
The
things that I haven't liked that Google's done, number one was China. Number two was the net neutrality quizzling act with the devil's deal with Verizon. And number three is this kind of stuff. When they think they're operating at an industry level, they act like a company. When they're operating person to person, they try to be decent. Sorry, that's my lights. They're run by Comcast.
Well, and you understand, though, that it becomes even more an issue when you're selling a lot of bandwidth, especially a lot of symmetric bandwidth. You know, we're giving you a gigabit. The temptation to run a server, I pay a lot of money for a gigabit from SoftLayer. The temptation is high. A gigabit, right. I could, for instance, have a radio station.
And in the long run, what you should, I wrote about this in What Would Google Do? You should look at your, a googly cable company, I said, actually, I should go back to this now and compare and contrast. A googly cable company would be an enabler of your creations.
Yes.
And it would be a good thing.
It's good for everybody.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
What they should offer is, and say, listen, we've got a more secure, better solution. We have Google's versions of AWS, which we're going to make ready for primetime and ready for plain old people at home. And we're not going to charge you more. We'd like you to use that and create stuff. And the more content you create, the better it is for Google. Hallelujah. You know, but we don't want to have to invest in the last mile of our network.
Right.
Okay, but from a service perspective, they should be trying to encourage people to make stuff and to do more.
And certainly it's their right as a commercial entity not to do that. But we would ask more from of them, I guess.
You know, maybe they say something like, if you have a publicly accessible server that has more than 10,000 concurrent connections, please contact us about a business, you know, or more than 1,000 connections, you know, contact us about a business plan. If it just seems like they could be a little more specific about what it is that they don't want, because everything is a server at this point. So that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly write language that would protect them against the stuff they don't want without being so blanket.
So there, we're not just being pure.
No, and I suspect what they'll do is every company does this. The default is,
yeah,
or you can't do that. And then if push comes to shove, all right, we can write this in such a way that everybody's going to be happy that we'll protect our network from crazy people. But still give you, because you're right, there's a real advantage to fostering the idea of everybody putting stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Google will learn more about the process. The NSA will learn more about the process. We're all happy.
Yeah. All right. Well, they can rewrite their terms of service. We ask you to do that, please, Google. Thank you.
Yeah.
We ask you to do that. I want a phone as soon as possible. I want to know when the heck the Nexus 7 is coming out with the LTE. And then finally, my friend Dan Gilmore emailed me today and said, ooh, they're offering further invitations to get one on Google Glass, and he wanted my invitation. And I don't have one, Google.
Oh, they said that they're going to give some explorers invitations, for a second person.
Yeah, I didn't get one either.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. I think that hasn't happened, but they're coming to that point. So Gilmore actually said, give me one?
Yeah.
He asked for one of your invitations. He's like,
hey,
I'm ready.
I hear you got an invitation. You know what? I give Dan a pass because he wrote a very, very strong commentary on The Guardian that I really supported yesterday about why the Bradley Manning verdict is still bad news for the press.
It is awful news for
the press. He was very outspoken and I think made a very strong case. Dan used to work at the San Jose Mercury News, decided to foster citizen journalism, and has really been a good voice out there. He called the Obama administration the most secretive administration of our time, and I think I'd agree with that. He quoted Jeremy Scahill saying, we're in a moment when journalism is being criminalized.
Yes.
And I agree with that. And it is something to really pay attention to. Why does our federal government believe that it needs to crack down on investigative journalism? This is the government that is serving us, that is elected by us to serve us. This is our government. It is our right to know what they're doing. They're working more and more in secrecy and...
They still charged under the Espionage Act. They called sharing information wanton publishing. They called taking the government's own information, which is the information of the people, stealing it. These are all very dangerous things. And at a time when we now know, thanks to Edward Snowden, the depth of the overreach the government is making, the need for having watchdogs and whistleblowers being so great, for the government to crack down to this level is tyrannical.
He says, and this is, I agree with this 100%, the Obama administration's war on leaks and by extension the work of investigative reporters who dare to challenge the most secretive government in our lifetimes has been unrelenting. Obama has charged more reporters and more people with violations of the Espionage Act than any president, than all the presidents before him.
All of them combined.
Combined.
So if I may, Leo, to do a little plug here, some folks tweeted me and I saw this, and it's a last-minute thing. But if you go to 1984day.com, you'll find that there is a series across the country of protests against the NSA this Sunday.
Good.
You'll find the Times. Now, the Germans beat us to this under the hashtag Stop Watching Us. They had demonstrations in 39 German cities the other day. And it's shocking that we have not the reaction here that they have there. But at least these folks are organizing this, and I think it's important. Did you go through the Guardian's revelations today?
PowerPoint? Yeah. Why don't you talk a little bit about this?
Well, it's called now I'm forgetting the name of it. What's it called?
I can't remember. Let me look it up.
It's there. No, it's on the rundown.
X key score.
X key score. And so, the and so the Guardian revealed, Glenn Greenwald from Snowden revealed the PowerPoint that trained people in this. And what this shows pretty clearly is how right Steve was about what was happening, because this is not about direct connections to servers. This is about them having everything we do. This is about them having a cache of 3 to 4 days of every HTTP request there is. And that then becomes searchable by any bozo working for Booz Allen. And the standard of saying, oh, we think it's a foreigner, okay, go ahead, is minor. And but what's shocking is the amount of information that they have about us, and it's stored in servers around the world, which I wonder if that's not a violation of various laws. And within there, in the language of it, there's just all kinds of scary stuff about what they know and what they can do. And again, this can't come from just saying, it's not like they just have access to one thing. The direct connection to the servers issue is not here at all. This is about... this is the fruit of them having a direct link into the raw feed of the internet, and they've got the metadata there, and so you can do a search and find me things that are written in German in coming out of Iran, spreadsheets that have MAC numbers in them, anomalies, VPN connections that are opened under these circumstances.
And they were concerned that so much activity on the internet was basically anonymous.
Anonymous.
So they said, well, all right, then we don't really have to have an email account or anything attached to the activity. We'll just collect it.
Right. So we don't need to know who you are. We don't need to know that. We're gonna find out anyway. And then we can go back. Then that's when they say, aha, we know enough. We know what's happening to this IP address. Let's go to Google. Mm-hmm. and with a warrant and get that out of them. But it's really sobering stuff. I think it's a bombshell. And, you know, the government's not going to be happy about it. And by the way, I should say in full disclosure that I'm now back advising The Guardian.
Good.
So I should
good
that.
For you, Jeff.
Kudos to the guy. You know, when you look at these slides are training slides for it might as well be a video at McDonald's.
Yes.
How
to flip the burger.
By the way, just remember that the X key score parses out everything it thinks is an email address. So don't be fooled by mishits. It's like any idiot can be trained to use this. And apparently they are training idiots to use it. And as Snowden said, that means they can in real time monitor anybody from the president of the United States on down. And man, if I'm a member of Congress and I read this, I would be quaking in my boots, because if you're a member of the so-called loyal opposition, how long before they start looking at what you're up to?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you passed this bill, you gave them permission to look at all your emails, all your phone calls, everything you're doing. And how long do you think before an administration decides that, hey, that congressman's not on our side, we better keep an eye on him?
Or that journalist, or the connection, or somebody trying to call a journalist. There's the number of ways you can talk to a journalist now are greatly reduced. They hold a rolling buffer of approximately 3 days of all unfiltered data.
All.
In KeyStore, taken from the collection site. The collection sites, we now know, are places where they tap right into the net.
Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Yahoo.
Massive distributed Linux cluster, over 500 servers distributed around the world. The system can scale linearly simply by adding a new server to the cluster. My favorite part was they have a map of where the servers are, and there's a whole line of them across Antarctica. And I said, what the hell's that? And somebody in Twitter speculated that those are servers in classified locations.
And the screenshots are Internet Explorer. Blah.
Yeah. Well, it's probably secure. It's probably IE6.
This is from 2012. So they explain, why should you be interested in HTTP? Because most people do most of what they do in HTTP. You should know what they do that.
So X key score connects unique data beyond user activity from front end full take feeds. Front end full take feeds. In other words, we scoop it all up.
How do I tell a terrorist that has no connection to known strong selectors? Answer. Look for anomalous events, e.g. someone whose language is out of place for the region they are in, someone who's using encryption, someone searching the web for suspicious stuff. Oh, now, what this means...
That's all of us.
When they went back to the earliest NSA warrantless wiretapping, you know, I argued at the time, and this is still borne out now, that what they were really looking for was a baseline so they could look for anomalies.
Right.
And the anomalies are the things that you thought might make you safe. Like, oh, let me get a burner phone. Anomaly.
Now, they do say in this article that they claim they've caught 300 terrorists using this technology.
Yeah, but at the same time, Leo, at the same time today, right before a hearing in Congress, Clapper from the DCI released or unclassified some documents about the phone record collection. And in the stories about that, they were first saying, oh, we caught lots of terrorists. And then basically they got down to essentially like one case where it was at all directly related to this. What they're saying constantly is, no, it's the whole picture, all this stuff together. We're catching lots of terrorists. We're stopping lots of plots. But there's no accountability here at all that says, well, show me that. Oh, well, we can't. We can't even tell you who the enemy is.
Well, and you combine that with the unprecedented attacks on journalists by the Obama administration. I think we know who the enemy could very well be very soon.
And out of...
Chilling.
Yes. Now, there's one other thing to mention, and I forget who it was, said... by the way, there are some blacked-out slides here. You really want to know what those are. I think those are about, you know, what they caught. There's reference to Tau here. Fingerprints from Tau are loaded into XKeyscore's application fingerprint ID engine. And Tau has been something that's been very secretive, involving the Chinese and watching servers and that kind of stuff. But they talk about, show me all the exploitable machines in country X. Now, explain that to me, Leo. What is an exploitable machine? Does that mean one that we have?
Well, almost all machines are exploitable because it means we can take control of that machine using a variety of malware attacks or other systems.
So that says that we have a lot of machines that we have put this stuff on.
It doesn't say exploited. It says exploitable.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I would say most machines are exploitable.
Well, operating systems with known exploits that could get them as far as they need
right,
to go.
Right.
Right. So probing just what versions, how patched it is, exactly. And then is this exploitable or not?
Yeah. It's good. You have those ready just in case you need them.
Yeah.
Ugh. So it's really depressing.
Future slide. This again was this presentation was in 2012. High speeds, better presentation. They need that. Entity extraction. So that, you know, it's going to get the system's going to get smarter. It's going to know entities. It's going to know places and people and things. VoIP.
Yeah.
So they're bragging that they're going to be able to do all this with a VoIP, and so on. So enough on the dystopian view of the world today. But I just wanted to. I'm glad we talked about this to bring it up because it's scary and important stuff.
Well, and we know a lot. I know a number of programmers have been approached by the federal government to design systems like this.
Really?
And technology has really taken huge leaps and strides. And if your goal is to get better at sifting through vast amounts of data to find things, then you're right on the curve because big data is huge right now, and a lot of people are experts in this. And I got to figure that the NSA and others in the federal government have access to some of the best programmers in the world, and that doesn't surprise me that they'd have these capabilities and expect them to get better and better rapidly.
In my field, you know, we have constant ridiculous circle jerk discussions about ethics and what's right and what's wrong, but it's a good thing. We should do that. I'm a journalism professor. It's okay. I like doing that. But we have a lot of talk about the codes that we have in this field, and we're constantly adjusting them and figuring them out. Is there that kind of discussion in your world of developers? Is it mature enough yet to say, hold on, folks, we need a field of developer ethics?
I absolutely think that we could have that, and we should have that. And I don't think that the conversation happens very much. In fact, my co-founder, Anil Dash, at FooCamp, a couple of years ago, did a session where he's basically like, okay, the software that we hate, you know, Facebook or whatever, bring up some examples of things gone wrong. It's like, we have to take responsibility for that. If you build something that's being misused for whatever reason, like that's on you. And we have to take responsibility for the way that we decide to spend our time, even if a big company is paying us in order to do that. And it's funny, we had this this talk, and there were a couple of, like, stricken faces in the room. it was interesting, right?
Because
it's easy, you know, it's easy for nerds who get paid very well, right, who are very, very smart, and who are very taken with the challenge, you know, as particularly a very complex challenge like big data, you know, that big data presents, to sort of separate yourself from how, you know, the morality and the ethics of it, right? So I think it's a discussion that needs to happen more. I don't think it happens very much. Neil and I talk about it a lot. I think more developers and more product designers in general should talk about it. I mean, you know, there's just been the conversation going on about, you know, Silicon Valley startups making products that are targeted toward young, rich Silicon Valley startup people, right? And, like, you know, should people be spending their time and talent and resources, in particular in the venture capital community as well, funding things that are meaningful and ethical and make sense and try to make the world a better place versus making another Uber or yet another dry cleaning delivery service or whatever. So I'm happy when I start to see those discussions happen a little bit more, but I think it could happen more. I think it would be useful for, I mean, certainly not to the level that journalists have these discussions.
Well, but we're having issues these days too, because we have, you know, native advertising and sponsored content and all this stuff. And, you know, the issues of publications trying to fool readers by presenting things as advertiser content, paid content, as if it's their content and affecting their brands. And then the separate discussion that we have about individual journalists, because a lot of journalists now, a lot of people who graduate from here, they need work. They're taking media skills with them, and those are skills that they could use to the end of journalism or to the end of PR or advertising. And when I was a young pup. In the industry, basically, if you left to go to PR, it's like you married a goy and you were dead to us.
Yeah,
right? You couldn't.
I still feel
back
that way, by the way.
You had shown yourself, and
you've gone over to the dark side to modernize the reference.
Yeah,
right.
And that's not true now in the field. And I had a discussion with my students about ethics of native advertising and all that. And I realized when I had that discussion, I did it way too late in the term, and I should have done it earlier. In fact, I was being observed that week because I was going through the process of getting promoted to full professor, and that was the week someone was in there, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what are they going to think? I turn out all these students who don't have the core ethics that we supposedly instill, and it's a more difficult thing now because the lines are fuzzier. So if I'm seeing that in a very mature field like mine, it strikes me that there's, and Tim Berners-Lee talks about the need for web studies as a field of academic pursuit.
What a good idea. Yeah.
I think it is, but I think part of that is technology ethics.
Ethics.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to leave people with a bad taste and a feeling of helplessness. So please, there is a way you can do something about this. As Jeff mentioned, protests are going to be occurring August 4th. Sunday, the rally against unconstitutional surveillance. You could find out more at 1984day.com. I think the more people who peacefully protest this, the more members of Congress will sit up and take notice. The other thing you can do, and you can do right now, is go to EFF.org, contribute, email. They have information on how you can write to, call, and otherwise contact your member of Congress. I think that's a good place to focus. And certainly support EFF. I do financially every single month, and I'm a sustaining subscriber. It really is a great organization. They do a lot of good for all of us. EFF.org and 1984day.com. I hate to... anything else before we go to our tips and tools and numbers? There's so much news, but I think that was a very important topic, so I'm glad you brought it up, Jeff.
Well, I was bring the downer, and that's my job.
Well, you know, it's a really good topic. How about this one? This is nice. Samsung apparently has been caught fudging the numbers. This is an old, long-standing trick. I can remember back to the days of ZD Labs. Companies would do this all the time. Once you've designed a synthetic benchmark to test the speed of devices, the very first thing companies start doing is looking for the benchmark. And then changing behavior, in this case, overclocking the processor when the benchmark is running. Anantech discovered this. They were going through the data on some benchmarks of the octa-core, the Exynos. That's the international version of the Galaxy S4. It happens to be the one I have. And they discovered multiple benchmarks that run those devices at higher CPU and GPU clock speeds than they normally run. Samsung apparently said, ah, you're running the benchmark. Let me just turn up the speed. Samsung's response says, no, that's what the GS4 does. It runs at a higher clock speed on full screen apps, and benchmarking apps just fall into that category. Of course, the code was called, or the program was called Benchmark Booster. That's kind of a giveaway.
Kind of a little bit. Say Samsung. Impressed me. That's what it's saying.
Impressed me. Benchmark Booster. Maybe they should have named it something a little different. I don't know. they say that benchmark apps may, in fact, run at higher clock speeds in some games, but that's just how it is.
That's just how great the phone is.
That's just how they operate. It's a shame if Samsung is doing that. But it's a long-standing tradition. I can remember for many years. Companies doing that in the PC market. And, you know, you get caught. It's very hard to do that and not get caught. And thanks to the super smart guys at Anand Tech, they are the best.
And yeah, it's a great site.
They caught it right away. So stop that. But, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and there's benchmarks. There's no reason to believe benchmarks. It's really how it feels in your hand. That's what really matters, right?
Yeah. On the list, I'm interested in UPS is going to test 3D printing in stores.
The United Parcel Service?
Yeah. So your UPS store will have 3D printing there.
Wow, is that interesting.
Oh, teleportation.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. Oh, yeah. You could send somebody a 3D model.
You could send somebody a thing. Yeah.
Wow. Really? Is that the point?
I mean, right? Yeah. That's got to be it.
Here's that part you needed.
Send them a part is a part you needed, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love, you know, I love the MakerBot, it's like $3,000 or whatever. I just, you know, for everyone to have a 3D printer is, you know, we're not there yet. So it makes sense that UPS or a UPS store would do it.
It's the last store in the other, Leo.
That is so funny.
Oh, beginning in the San Diego area.
Well, I'm going to send you something. I'm going to send you something, Gina, as soon as they're open.
Yeah, me a model.
Send you a twit hat.
I want a head. Yeah.
You don't mind wearing a plastic hat, do you?
A Leo head. I want something to the twit logo. Something that would be really fun. Gosh, you never see the phrase beginning in the San Diego area. That's very exciting.
Somebody from UPS wants to take some good business trips.
Web6825 wants Jeff to 3D you a cronut.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, cronut.
Oh, man.
Now, what they need is a scanner in the other UPS store. So you could put a cronut in there. It scans it, sends it to San Diego, and then makes it.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, teleportation.
We're getting close. The future's almost here. How exciting. Let's see.
You tried Quip yet?
Brett got a lot of attention. That just shows you how much love and respect in the community there is for Brett Taylor.
Yeah,
he was worked at Google on Maps, then left and did FredFeed, which is awesome. Went to Facebook, right?
Yep, or CTO.
Was CTO of Facebook, retired. And his new startup is Quip, which seems to me completely dumb, but that's just me.
You just said nice things about him. You pull the rug out.
Well, I do think nice of him, and I think one of the reasons they're getting so much press is because everybody loves Brett Taylor. So the idea of this is it is a mobile-first word processor.
I think it's interesting that we're seeing this renaissance in, like, writing tools, right? There's, like, Medium and Quip, and you're seeing some new blogging tools, Ghost and Octopress. I think the point is, like, that writing is still too hard, and in a mobile-first world, I actually haven't tried Quip, so I'm not sure, but this morning on Embedo, which was a show on 5x5, I interviewed the founder of Draft, draftin.com.
Love Draft.
Which is really cool. Yeah. Markdown-based WordPress. I shouldn't call it a word processing app. It's a really beautiful compose experience. A really easy way to write, and it gives you GitHub-like pull requests, so you can collaborate. So if I write a draft, I can send it to you, Leo, and say, "Hey, what do you think?" And then you can make some changes and send a pull request to me, and then I could accept changes one by one. It's way better than Microsoft Word's track changes, and it exports to Dropbox, and it supports Markdown. It's just a really modern web app. And it made me realize, like, yeah, you know, this whole writing thing hasn't been solved yet. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to Quip.
It's a free app, iPad only right now, although they say they're going to go to other places, I guess.
There's a preview for Android that's they say right. is not done, but you right. can download it. It is in the Play Store. You can download it, but they say straight up it is not done.
According to the PC Magazine review, it can't print, can't save your documents, doesn't let users upload files or change the font size, and lacks basic word processor features.
Hmm.
But it does collaborate. You can work offline. I don't know. I'll download it. I'll let you know. I mean, I don't have any use for it. I mean, the use case was let's all work on a document together. You could do that in Google Docs pretty darn well.
Not pretty, but you can do it.
Yeah. Mobile first is a little weird because you don't have keyboards. And so it's not the first place I'd want to create a word processing document.
Yeah, fair.
I'm sure Brett's scratching his own itch, but I'm just not that itchy, so.
You're more scratchy.
So I don't really understand.
Just not that itchy.
I'm just not that itchy.
Show title.
I don't really know what it's for. You know, occasionally we'll work on press releases, right? There's some collaboration involved, but the collaboration tools that exist now are pretty good on desktop. You can write it up in Microsoft Office, for instance, and then have the revisions back and forth. There's excellent, really good Subitha Edit, for instance, on the Mac, which allows us to work simultaneously. Google Docs does that now. So on the desktop, this is well-solved, old-time, old-school. And he's right. It's not on mobile, but there's a reason. Who wants to create documents on mobile?
Right, right. Or maybe this is about reading documents because it's kind of like responsive design, but for documents that are not necessarily web pages. So the documents look nice no matter what the screen size. And these are documents that are not meant for printing. They're meant for sharing and just reading on a screen.
Yeah, they show to-do lists as an example, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really get it either.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try it out, though.
Yeah. Well, see, that's Brett. People love Brett. I love Brett. I love Friend Feed was the best thing that ever happened. And so, of course, it was a flop, but sad.
That's the nerds loved it.
Did you like it? Were you on
Friend Feed? He builds you up, he tears you down. Yeah.
Anyway, I wish Brett luck. I'm sure he doesn't need any money. But they've raised quite a bit of money for this. So I'm sure it's going to be very big.
The amount raised never reflects on the product.
Yeah, no, look at color. Wow. $41 million, and they never really did anything. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, tool tip number of the week. But first, a word from our good friends at 99 Designs. I got 99 problems, but a design ain't one. If you go to 99designs.com, you'll get a design you love from one of their community. Boy, is it growing fast. When we first started doing these ads, it said of 200,000 designers is now 241,022 designers. So here's what happens. You go to 99designs.com and you say, I got a problem. I need a designer to do something. We did T-shirt design. You can do print collateral. You can do web stuff, too. If you go to look at their landing page design page here. You know, this is an important part of your business. It's the front door to many online businesses. So how's your landing page? Well, you can get slick, affordable landing page design from 99 Designs. Designs start as low as $199. Landing page design, $299. Here's some of the contests. You know, it's a good idea before you put a contest up on 99 Designs to look at what some of the people are doing to get an idea. Help Fitness Works with a new landing page. There's 8 entries, and you can see, you know, what they asked for, what people have submitted, the top entries. You can see the winning design. You can see what they ended up hiring. This person ended up getting hired to do the design for the entry page for this website. I think this is really, really cool. Lots of designers looking for work. And if you're looking for great designs, 99designs.com is the place to go for a new logo, a mobile app, a business card, a T-shirt, any kind of graphic design. Now, here's the deal. Visit 99designs.com/twig. And you'll get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. Let me go there. 99designs.com/twig. That gives you more designer time and attention. They'll bold, highlight, and feature a design project in their marketplace. You'll get nearly twice as many designs. 99designs.com/twig. They're really a nice company. We've hung out with them. They're based in San Francisco, and they're just great people. It's a great product. 99designs.com. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Gina Trapani of SmarterWare.org for her tip of the week.
All right. This is how to activate Google Voice Search with a keyboard shortcut. So if you go to google.com, there's that little microphone in the far right of the search box. If you do the keyboard shortcut, which is control shift period, like the dot period, the microphone will pop right up. So you can start speaking. Ooh. Speaking your search. I always thought speaking your search was maybe a little weird, but, you know, I spent quite a bit of time, as you can see on this show, talking to my computer. So it's kind of useful. So, yeah, I had no idea about this keyboard shortcut. I don't think it's new. I think it's just new to me. But control shift period on Windows or command shift period for Mac will bring up the big old red microphone, and you can start asking Google what you want from the Google homepage.
My favorite part of that was that Gina felt compelled to translate the word period. You know, the dot.
The dot. That one. Dot. You know what they call it. Dot.
Just wanted to make sure. The dot. Yeah, dot.
I did that earlier when I
called people out there is what we used to call period.
I call all exclamation marks bangs now.
Yeah, bangs.
Yeah.
Hash bang.
Well,
yeah. Hash bang.
I had a British editor working for me at Entertainment Weekly, I can't say this on this part of the show. She called it a dog's word starts with a C, which means.
Ooh.
That's what they evidently called on Fleet Street.
I'm going to call it that from now on. Oh. There are too many dog members in this sentence.
The bang? Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I can see that.
I find that hard to stomach.
Things you can't unsee.
I love the Britishisms. You know, you think British people are very cultured, very, you know, refined, and then you hear them swear.
Yeah. It's true.
My biggest eye-opener, what was that great movie, In the Loop? Have you seen that?
No.
It's on Netflix. Ooh. Watch it. Hysterical. It's about a British government member, minister, and it's just, it's the funniest movie ever. Came out in 2009. And one of the main characters in there is an assistant to the prime minister who swears a blue streak that is just unbelievable. Dogs member is the least of it. And yes, James Gandolfini is in that. He plays in that movie. He plays a general.
Wow.
He's wonderful in it. It's a very, very good show. It's apparently based on a British TV show called The Thick of It.
Oh, which is very good. Very funny.
Prime Minister, fancy a war.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. It is so funny, and it's such a send-up of government.
You should look up the series, Leo. You would love the series then. It's great.
And I think that Veep, which was the HBO series with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, was based on all of that.
Loosely, but it's not
loosely.
Not nearly as...
But they're trying to get the verbal stuff together. Yeah. Good. All right. There you go. A movie tip as well. Jeff, what's your number of the week?
I've decided for this. So my number of the week is 1803. Print is dead at 1803, The Onion. And the reason I'm showing this to you, besides the joy of...
You're quoting that article.
I am quoting.
Not only that, he's holding up a newspaper, ladies and gentlemen.
So I'm quite... It did not go gentle to that good night, though, Jarvis continued. It was tough. Tough as nails to the very end. So I'm quoted.
You're in the obituary for print.
I went on Google Plus and I put up, I said, well, actually, they could have really quoted me. And here's what I said about it in Gutenberg the Geek. So my friend Sean said this to me. You can't get these in New York now. You can get them in Madison. But here's the funny part about it is that was a trick to tell Madison that they were going to stop printing the paper.
Wow, it really is dead.
So when I saw this, I said, oh, the irony of ironies. Of course, I have to have this in print. And so I'm going to frame this in my office. I have in my office, let me see if I can do this here. The last edition of Chicago Today, the paper that had No Tomorrow that I used to work on.
Wow.
And I have in my office over there the last edition of the Chicago Daily News. So now I have the last edition of the Madison Onion. And I'm very proud to quote it.
It's a paper cemetery, your office, basically.
I think a lot of us who read The Onion online and who saw Onion video and so forth didn't know it was a print paper. I was kind of surprised when I first saw it in print. Yeah, I guess
it used to be all around New York. I guess not anymore.
It was New York, Madison, what is it, Austin, a few places.
They explained that they actually jobbed out the printing and ad sales in markets to other companies, and some were profitable and some weren't. But I think they're basically all going to become unprofitable.
That's kind of sad. So Madison's dead, but not the other print.
New York's dead. I think they're one by one. They're just.
It started in Madison, so I think if they're killing Madison, they're probably killing it all. 1803. I'm sorry, 1,803 years old.
Yeah.
In other words, you are so well known as a critic of print that they didn't ask you for a quote. They just made up a quote.
Were you happy with it? It was a pretty great joke. It was really well done, I thought.
It was a good joke.
It shows how well known you are, Jeff. That's really awesome.
So here's the lead. New York. Sources close to print, the method of applying ink to paper in order to convey information to a mass audience, have confirmed that the declining medium passed away early Thursday morning. Which means the communication was 1,803 years old.
Oh. That is hysterical if it weren't so true.
Yeah.
My tool is something that's not out yet, but Gina and I were talking about this. Koosh, the well-known, very famous creator of Clockwork Mod, he's a great Android developer. I guess you were talking about this yesterday, is creating a mobile to Chromecast app. It's not out yet. You can't download it yet. Unfortunately, this video seems to have frozen. Let me see if I can refresh the YouTube page.
Yes, so he created an Android share intent.
So if you have stuff, I love it, by the way, that his video starts with two dirty socks. He doesn't, he's not big on production value. But the idea is if you have content, movie, video that you shot a picture on your phone, that you could just then send it to.
Hey, this is a demo of my Chromecast app that I wrote.
By the way, notice
he's got it on.
The choice of phone, excellent. And that's a Google Edition version, or he's running he's probably running Cyanogen.
Basically, it lets me take a video or a picture and fling it straight to my TV. So I will start recording right now.
There's a dog.
And we can watch my dog for a bit, maybe get a little better angle here.
Not exactly riveting dog video.
Riveting dog video.
7 p.m. past his bedtime. So that should be enough video.
Yes,
so
that's more than enough. Thank you, Koosh. No, but this is what's cool.
I'll select it. And then right up here, there's a share to Chromecast icon. That
it
shows
would just
up
be a. So you could install it.
It's already selected.
And it would become a share.
Yeah, it's a share
right
item.
There. So if I click it.
Instead of having a Chromecast button on the app, presumably anything that could, reasonably. Look at that. Talk about instant satisfaction.
As you can see, this was the video I just took.
Isn't that great?
Smoke and mirrors happening here.
So knowing Koosh, it will be free and available quickly. He does have some paid stuff, but you can pay for Clockwork Mod, which I do, and I encourage you to do.
If you have auto backup or instant upload enabled, your videos are going into YouTube anyway on Google Plus.
That's true.
This takes a lot more. This is like instant, right to the TV. So I like that a lot. I like that he demonstrated that you could do it. In fact, he got into a little Twitter fight with Gruber. He was like, Gruber said that you couldn't do this, but yes, you can. Here's me doing it.
John really showed his Apple fanaticism when his reaction to the Chromecast was so lukewarm, so tepid. I'm like, oh, big deal. Okay.
He's
stay in that ecosystem, John. You enjoy it.
If you want a better dog video now, have you seen the dog video of the guy who returns home after 6 months?
Yeah.
I just clicked on it. Oh, I'm watching an ad.
I'll put it up.
Did you put the link in there? Because
I'll put the link in there. There's also a version for a cat, which we'll get to in a second.
But. Yeah, the cat one was great. I've seen the cat one. I haven't seen the dog one. I didn't realize it was a response.
It's a response to
I love the cat one. The cat, as you might imagine, is nonplussed. Whatever. Here's the dog. After being gone over 6 months, this is what happened when my puppy saw her daddy again.
Buggy.
He's coming up the stairs. I guess where was he? Traveling or was he in the army?
Army, okay.
Overseas.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, he's happy. That's a happy dog. Oh, yeah, yeah, he was in the military, yeah. Oh, isn't that nice? That's a happy dog.
That tail. That's the greatest thing.
Oh, that's
a good, that's a welcome home for a soldier. That's awesome.
Keeps going on. Give it another minute.
He just won't give.
Oh.
That makes, that brings tears to my eyes.
Did you miss Daddy? Did you miss me?
I don't think Ozzy would do that for me.
So emotional.
Oh.
Is that great?
Oh. Anybody who thinks dogs don't know what's going on. Yeah. Now we got to find the cat one.
Now you got to find the cat one. Yeah, okay, all right.
Let's all right, let me see if I can find that. Is this, wait, this goes on, but I presume it's much like, much the
that's
same.
About, that's about it. That's about the end.
Okay. Yeah. It's not the end by a long shot. Cat welcomes home soldier. Let's see if we can find.
Cat sees owner after 6 month leave.
Oh, okay. Cat. Yeah, yeah, because there's actually some with the cat actually welcoming the soldier. Cat sees owner after 2 years. Oh, this is from Reddit.
No, this is it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or six months, it. Whatever. Here you go. This is the... I think the dog's still in the background. Wait a minute. Let me apologize for that. He says, hey, I'm home.
I'm home. Oh, yeah. Here, Charlie.
Oh, that thing is here again. That pretty much says it all.
Yep.
It couldn't be truer. Couldn't be truer. Jeff Jarvis is blogging at buzzmachine.com. His book, Public Parts, is available at all bookstores. Don't forget Gutenberg the Geek, soon to be quoted by The Onion. It's an
and
Amazon
single. I just recorded the e-book version of Gutenberg the Geek.
We'll look for that in Audible. That's great.
Sweet. Yeah. Right
is it going to be on Audible or what?
Audible.
Oh, that's great.
I went to Audible HQ, recorded.
Nice studios there, huh? Is that a nice place?
Yeah.
Gina Trapani, smarterware.org, founding editor of Life Hacker, author of a number of programs, including Think Up at thinkup.com, the Twitter analyzer. also, the author of To Do Text, todotext.com. Ozzy, I'm home. Ozzy, I'm here. I'm home, Ozzy.
I'm here. Over here.
He's running away. and we do this show every Wednesday, 1 p.m. There he goes. Thanks, Ozzy. Bye. 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Please join us live. We love seeing you in the chat room. But if not, we do have on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/twig and everywhere you can download internet broadcast. And in fact, the best thing to do is subscribe to it. That way you'd be sure to get one every week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.